Our final case of the day is United States against Brown. Ms. Varner.
May it please the Court. Sarah Varner on behalf of Defendant Appellant Jamel Brown. This case is before you today following Mr. Brown's plea of guilty and sentence at the district court level. Both parties in this case would agree that Rule 32 requires the district court to rule upon disputed facts at sentencing. The issue before this court today is whether the district court made sufficient rulings on those disputed facts to preserve Mr. Brown's right to be sentenced on the basis of accurate information and this court's ability to meaningfully review Mr. Brown's sentence.
So, Ms. Varner, I mean, I am not at all clear what the district court was talking about when she said, I'll not resolve the matter as a factual matter, but I'll hear from Mr. Brown as to his version of the facts. But after that mysterious sentence, she does go on later in the sentencing proceeding after the testimony is heard, and she makes statements that look to me like resolutions of the facts. The assault on Officer Fritchie, the violence of that assault, the reckless driving through the neighborhood, and so on. She reviews actually at some length. And so even though she said that weird thing, it looks to me, taking the transcript as a whole, that she made findings of fact that we can review.
Your Honor, my position is that she did not make a finding of fact at that point. She was simply...
Well, what did she mean? I mean, she's saying all the things I was referring to. maybe the context, she's saying, well, I think actually you need a sentence above the guideline range, but she's giving a factual basis for that thought.
Rule 32 requires that she either rule upon Mr. Brown's objection to the pre-sentence report or state that she will not consider those matters at sentencing. When she gives her sentencing colloquy...
She did two things. She not only said the things that Judge Wood observed, but she also said expressly, I adopt the pre-sentence report. Now, we've said in a number of cases that you can make factual findings by adopting the pre-sentence report. So first evidence is taken, and the judge then says, I'm ruling that the pre-sentence report is correct. Why is that not a factual finding?
Your Honor, the problem in this case is that she adopts the pre-sentence report in whole before she hears any of the evidence on the case. The entire sentencing hearing is focused on these factual disputes. The driving force behind the sentence, as is made clear by her statement of reasons, was Mr. Brown's attempt to shoot and kill four people. That was a hotly contested fact at the sentencing hearing, and evidence was presented by both sides.
Yes, and it's quite evident, it seems to me, that the judge adopted the prosecutor's position on those facts.
I believe
that's
that...
That's what was going on. That's why the hearing was held, and that's why the judge then takes the prosecutor's side. That's normally what triers of fact do, take evidence, and they then choose a side.
We have two points in the sentencing hearing that are possible for this court to review for a ruling. The first is the adoption of the PSR, and the last is the sentencing colloquy. It's clear to me that the district court judge tried to make her ruling on those objective facts when she adopted the PSR in whole. The problem with that is that she cannot do that. That's untenable, according to this court, for her to make that finding before the presentation of the evidence. It's clear from the record, though, that at that point she has taken it as a given that Mr. Brown attempted to shoot and kill four people. That's clear to me from Mr. Brown's allocution statement. During his allocution statement, the district court judge references his attempt to shoot and kill four people, and at that point Mr. Brown objects and says, hey, I didn't do that. I may have taken out my gun. I didn't try to shoot anyone.
I was just trying to scare the wits out of them. Yeah, he does say that, but I just don't know how we can understand what the court says as anything but a decision that these witnesses, who by now she's heard, that he actually, just by some stroke of luck, didn't kill them, and it wasn't that he wasn't trying to, that he was taking some precaution, you know, maybe not chambering bullets or whatever, to make sure that there was no harm done.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind, as I just said, when she adopted the findings of the PSR in whole, she accepted as a given at that point that hotly contested fact. So when she reaches her sentencing colloquy and she's discussing 3553 factors, she simply references the facts of the case. It's my position that is not enough. Even in the cases where this court has said that a court may adopt the findings of the PSR in whole, even as to disputed matters, there's more on the record than we have in this case. In this case, this is just a simple statement by the court. In other cases, such as Kuntz, the judge did rely on disputed facts in sentencing, but explained why the court was comfortable in relying on the factors that it did. Additionally, in Sykes, the court relied on the factors that were disputed, but the court cited relevant case law, explained why it agreed with the government, and explained why it was rejecting the defendant's version of events. We don't have anything of that nature in the sentencing colloquy here.
Ms. Warner, isn't our situation here one of timing? That Judge Barker made the adoption of the PSR and says, I'm now going to hear from the allocution. So is it your position, because she made that early initial adoption and then says, I'll hear, that she isn't listening to the position of the defendant? And then when she reiterates again, subsequent to her earlier statement, that she's going to continue to adopt the PSR, maybe one could say she might have been more explicit in reaffirming it, but isn't that what occurred here?
I do think it's partially an issue of timing. I think had the district court listened to all of the evidence that was presented and then made a statement that I adopt the findings of the PSR in whole, here's why we just don't have anything on the record to show that she did consider the evidence. We don't have any discussion of...
Well, she held the hearing.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is there any evidence that she slept through the hearing?
No, Your Honor, there's not.
And she references the things that people were talking about in the hearing, as Judge Flom says, later on, maybe at a somewhat later point than would have been ideal, but is there something so bad about the order in which she took things that we have to send this back to her?
I believe so, Your Honor. And I would point again to the fact that from the time that she said, I adopt the PSR in whole, and she made also that confusing statement of, I'm not going to rule on this, but I will hear your version of events if you want to give it. At that point, she had already made up her mind about the evidence in that
case.
Well,
that's really your argument, that the judge, by making that position clear on the record about adoption, really is going through some formality that can't impact her reflection on the sentence. Isn't that what you're saying?
I would agree with that, at least in regards to the disputed fact about his attempt to shoot the weapon.
Yes, as to the disputed facts of the speech.
It's clear that that was the driving force behind her sentence. That's where the district court's attention was focused. That's what she stated in her statement of reasons. That was a fiercely contested fact at sentencing. So her adoption of that so early, and then her statement in the allocution that, what about your attempt to shoot and kill these people, she already accepted that as a given. There may
be. Isn't it a situation where she just couldn't be moved from her initial read of the PSR even after hearing the position? So she just initially suggested that she's taken a position, has a hearing, and doesn't move from that. Now, that's what I'm saying, is it's just a matter of timing.
That could be the case, Your Honor. And in this case, Mr. Brown is concededly guilty. The sentence imposed by the district court may be appropriate. As you're saying, it's not without support in the record. However, without following the dictates of Rule 32, we can't be assured of what the district court was relying on following her adoption of the pre-sentence report at the beginning.
If we were to adopt your position, would we simply be sending the case back to the district court for the judge not to have a hearing, but to just read the transcript and then be more specific, issue a more specific order? Is that the possible outcome here?
We would ask that this case be vacated and remanded for a full resentencing hearing. there are no further questions, I'll reserve any remaining time.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Warden.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is James Warden. I represent the government here today, as I did before the district court. And I believe that Judge Flom has characterized the issue very well, along with Judge Wood's initial comment. The government respectfully believes that the appellant's argument essentially is putting form way over substance in this case, and that when the record is reviewed in its entirety, it's very clear that Judge Barker, in fact, completely considered the objections, completely considered all the evidence, and then made the findings.
Did you think she meant when she said, I'll not resolve the matter as a factual matter, speaking about Mr. Brown's objection? Surely that's not the way we go about things.
You're exactly right, Judge, and let me say that at the time, I acknowledge, of course, I was in the courtroom, and that didn't strike me, but when I read the transcript, it did. And my best take is that she meant now. I'll not resolve it now. And I think in the end, that's the most important point here, is because in the end, I think what matters the most is that the record completely substantiates the findings that she made. And a lot of the evidence was completely uncontested. And again, this court has said, and I cite the cases in the brief, it's not enough just to object to the pre-sentence report. If then there's evidence that's uncontroverted, as happened here, that supports the finding, it's not enough to say I object. And let me emphasize this, too, because I think the appellant's attorney sort of moved into something that's not here, which is sort of the reasonableness of this sentence. The only thing on appeal is whether or not the enhancement for reckless endangerment was supported by the evidence. A lot of what was presented at the sentencing hearing was focused more on the upward variance as it was to that. Aside from the fact that Jamel Brown tried to kill the civilians who tried to help the officer out, was the fact that he had all this reckless endangerment before he even assaulted the officer, and then he knocked the officer unconscious. None of that was contested at the hearing.
So are you saying that the drive through the neighbor, through the school zone, the high-speed chase, et cetera, et cetera.
That would all support the enhancement, Your Honor.
And not contested.
Not contested. And if you'll look at the transcript, Officer Frischi, there was no cross-examination. So what other finding does the judge make? Officer Frischi testified in great detail about how Brown ran stop signs, ran red lights, ran people off the road, driving through a school zone at 80 miles an hour. That's recklessness endangerment during flight. The only thing on this appeal is this two-point enhancement for that. And all of those things, which were completely uncontested, support that enhancement. Candidly, Judge Barker could have maybe said this a little bit more clearly in terms of the order in which she did it. But in the end, it's the result that's supported by the evidence. And again, I think the government's position is the most important thing is uncontroverted evidence supports this. I want to emphasize again to the court, as I did in the brief too, that the review here should be for plain error because there was no objection at the hearing by the appellant, Brown. Your Honor hasn't ruled on my objections. And so that has been forfeited. And hence, the only basis to review, to reverse this would be a miscarriage of justice. And clearly the record indicates that there's not a miscarriage of justice here. I'll rely on the brief unless the court has any more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warden. Anything further, Ms. Varner? You have a few seconds, not clear exactly how many.
I want to address just briefly the contention that there is evidence on the record to support the enhancement that was not challenged. That may be the case. There is evidence in the record that may support the enhancement. However, as I mentioned before, the driving force behind this sentence was his attempt to shoot and kill four people. That was the hotly contested fact at sentencing. That's what was relied on in the statement of reasons. Without clarity on that, we can't determine what was in the district court's mind when she applied the enhancement and when she gave the upward adjustment on his sentence. And I would say also that even if the record is sufficient here, the district court's job is to make the necessary findings to support sentencing calculations. And then this for Mr. Brown to have appropriate appellate review, which addresses the issue of harm.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.